You ready for some coffee, honey?
Absolutely.
I'll pour.
Great coffee. I'm Dr. Ron Martinelli.
And I'm Linda Martinelli.
And we are talking
while married. We are so late sitting down tonight. And I'm tired. I made us decaf. How about that?
Yeah, but what a fantastic evening with friends, right? I mean, the real Texas hoedown, the barbecue, the rodeo, the ribs. It was a beautiful, gorgeous day.
Oh, and a great band. Oh, I love
that. I think that's the best band that we've had since we've been here.
Yeah, I have to get their name. I have to find out who they were because they were really good.
And you know, they've got a couple of CDs, and I screwed up because I didn't get one of them, and I really should have because I really enjoyed that band.
Nothing like a good Texas hoedown.
Well, listen, I want to start talking about Gina Haskell. Okay, and you know who Gina is?
I do, yes, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so here's a 33-year CIA operative. Most of the time she worked undercover. I mean, it's a very difficult job, right?
Mm-hmm.
UC, we both know this, UC is work is very, very difficult. You could lose your life at any time.
Oh, absolutely.
Because you never know if you're compromised, right?
Sure.
And, you know, she's also the first woman career operations officer, right, that they've had in the CIA, right? So she's been nominated by President Trump to be the new CIA director. And over 50 former security and intelligence officials from both sides of the aisle, okay, even John Brennan, who was President Obama's former CIA director. There was another one under Bush, and I can't remember his name, General Hayden at the time, the guy from the Air Force that was the CIA director. Henry Kissinger has supported her. All these people have supported her, and the Democrats, and including a couple of our own, you know, Rand Paul, are saying that they're not going to vote for this woman. It is absolutely incredible.
Doesn't it seem like Rand Paul does that for every single nominee and then he comes around and he goes ahead and votes? I don't understand. There's some sort of game being played there. But again, you have an extremely qualified person for a position and you get the obstruction that's happening again on the Democratic side, because it's nobody that President Trump ever will nominate for anything that they will vote for.
Well, you know, what frosts my socks about this, okay, is the fact that those were different times, okay, during 9/11, okay? We had people in custody and we had lost, you know, over 3,000 Americans, okay, when the planes went into the buildings, all right? And we were so concerned at that time that we were going to lose more people. And we had the waterboarding program, okay? You know, the covert program, we had it. It was approved by the president. It was approved by Congress. We had strict guidelines on how that was to be done. And she was in charge of that program at one time. And she did exactly what she was ordered to do. And this now, after all of this stuff has changed and the rules have changed, they're dumping on her for this. And what bothers me about this, sweetheart, is that how can you trust anybody now in government? Because they give you the go-ahead to go do something like this. You do it to save your country, to save all of us, and now they just stab her in the back.
Well, absolutely. And as you say, the big thing is that it was an approved program at the time, and she did her job as she was supposed to do it in order to protect all Americans. And as you say, now, you know, everybody comes up against her. I think she'll pass through, but you know, you just don't know with this political climate of destruction.
Well, you know what bothers me again about this is that, you know, she just recently said, you know, I'm thinking about not moving forward with my own nomination.
Oh, I did hear that. Right?
Now, there is a self-effacing person, and she, you know, has sacrificed her entire career, and she's willing to sacrifice the rest of her career when she's the best person for the job. And I want her to stay in there, and I want her to fight, because we need people in the intelligence and security departments like CIA Chief Gina Haspel. So, you know, we got your back, Gina.
Yes. Yep.
All
good
right.
Luck.
Well, the next thing I wanted to talk about is Warren Buffett. Okay. Billionaire Warren Buffett. And apparently he's come out in favor of Obama's 2015 nuclear agreement with the Iranians. How do you feel about that?
Well, I didn't like it at the time, and I'm not a politician. I don't know all the ins and outs of it, but I didn't feel that it gave us enough oversight and enough of a way to ensure that they are not creating nuclear weapons. And it also, as I understand it, gives them a way to have them somewhat down the road. I'm not for just, you know, pushing the ball down the road here, because that's going to come sooner than we all know. And, you know, we all have kids, and we don't want them to have to deal with this. This whole thing just, to me, stunk to high heaven with all the money that was sent over there and airplanes and so forth. This was
billions of dollars. I think $155 billion in cash. That's when you know it's wrong. It's untraceable. And look at what they've done with the $155
billion. Here's what they haven't done. They haven't done anything to improve the quality of life of their people there.
You got it. You
so,
said it.
So what is it that they're doing with that? What do you think they're doing with that? And how is it that we could be this foolish to see what they're not doing with that money that they said that they would be doing, and just be naive to think that they're not doing subversive things with the money?
Well, I think for sure that they've been funding various, you know, terrorist groups. I know Hamas and all these other groups. I think they've been bartering with North Korea. I think they've been bartering with China to become a nuclear power. And that would completely destabilize the whole Middle East. And the thing that bothers me about Warren Buffett, who's a smart man and he should know better, is that he said that his reason for backing the 2015 Obama plan was that he favors peace over time and the security of Israel. That guy has got to be smoking dope. Okay, these people have consistently, these ayatollahs have consistently said that they want to wipe Israel off the face of the map. And
right,
what better way to do it than with a nuclear warhead?
Sure. Yeah. And there's, you know, what are we doing exactly to see that they're keeping their promises? And we've already heard about a number of ways that they're not. So this is not something that I look at every day. I didn't like it when the agreement was made. I didn't feel comfortable with it, and I still don't today. And I have to really hope that President Trump, you know, that he looks at this and makes the right decision. Now, what really frosts my socks, Ron, is John Kerry, who's a man that I really have no respect for all the way back to his Vietnam days. He is doing this shadow diplomacy right now, going around to people in Germany, speaking with Iranians that have come over to the U.S., talking to the Pakistanis, telling everybody not to support President Trump in if he decides to cancel this agreement. And what right do they have? I mean, they will not let our president be the president. They want to butt into every single thing that he does. And nobody went around them and did this when they were in office. Right. But yet they have to keep their hands in it. There was some deal with Kerry about he and his family getting money on this whole deal, as I recall.
Oh, well, not only with Kerry, but with
Biden.
Yeah, but that was China.
Okay.
But you know what? It's the same thing. Okay, these people These countries are our adversaries. And I like what you said about the fact that when Obama was president of the United States, nobody that I know of from the Republican side, certainly none of the Trump people, had gone around behind their back and tried to belittle them or cut the legs out from the negotiation, even though we knew that was a horrible, horrible deal that we struck with the Iranians. So, you know, just goes back to the whole deep state thing. And I like this term that you use, and I've heard it before, this whole shadow diplomacy thing. This is the type of stuff that has to end. You know, I personally think it's a violation of the Logan Act, but of course I'm not an attorney, but I also know that it's never been enforced.
Well, and that's the thing, is that it has never been enforced, but it is on the books. So who's to say that it can't be enforced? Because it is on the books. And there's our, I think the dogs want to join our conversation here. but I think that they should try this, or at least, you know, There has to be something that they can do, because an American can't just run around and try to subvert what the President of the United States is doing.
Oh, hear, hear.
Well, you know, while we're talking about politics, and I kind of want to stay in that just for a moment, because Liz Wheeler on Tipping Point on One America News Network, and that's a network that you're always working for, and I know that you really like working with Liz.
I love Liz. She's just so smart.
She is really smart. And, you know, I don't get a chance to watch television as often as sometimes I'd like to, but I, you know, she had done a piece that I just thought so much of. She really is quite brilliant. And it was on the United States of Women Summit.
Oh, well, I didn't hear it, so why don't you fill
me in? Okay, well, Michelle Obama was a speaker at the United States of Women Summit, and Mrs. Obama said that she was concerned about us meaning women. Okay, so we're talking about women because it is the Women's Summit.
Get it?
And what we all think, and she just does not know what's going on in our heads, that we would let it happen, that President Trump would get elected. So she's questioning our thought processes as women who would vote for President Trump. And I really resent that. And I know that Liz Wheeler resented that too. And Liz brought up a lot of really good points about exactly why we would make that decision.
But what did she say?
Well, she said that, you know, unemployment for women right now is at historic lows, which means employment is at historic highs for women, right?
Okay, so low employment.
Low unemployment
Low unemployment for women.
Right.
Gotcha.
The lowest unemployment for black women in history since President Trump became president.
Okay.
The job market is better. Their side, when I say their side, I mean the Obama side and the Hillary side, right? Which is her question really is, why would we not have elected Hillary, who was so much more qualified and a woman? Okay. Well, they champion for women. They champion choice for women. But they want to take away our women's rights to use firearms. So over 200,000 times a year, women use firearms to protect themselves from sexual abuse.
You know what? I'm a criminologist, and I didn't even know that.
Well, there you go. I'm proud of myself.
And I'm a gun guy, too, but I didn't even know that.
Well, and they champion abortion for women, and I understand that's a choice that many people make. Liz mentioned that 30 million unborn women were aborted since Roe v. Wade went into effect.
So unborn 30 million, female fetuses.
Exactly. And that Hillary and Barack Obama wanted abortion up until the moment before birth. They wanted it to be legal up until the moment before birth.
That is so nuts and actually so dangerous.
And 80% of women in the country do not want abortion to be legal until that moment.
So, Linda, what do you think accounts for the lack of reconciliation between what Michelle Obama says and what women in America really believe. Because I have an idea, but I just want to try you out.
I just think that she's the one who's disconnected, not us. Because there, what's happening is there misunderstanding. You know, one of the things that Liz said, I have to parrot here. She said that we don't vote with our genitalia. None of us should be voting because a certain way, because we're a woman, or because we're black, or because we're gay, or because we're anything, okay? We should be voting with our brains, whoever we are.
And I agree with that. And that's the comment, you know, that I made before about this whole issue of culture think, where these other people are trying to force people like you and me and other people to think a certain way when we've all got common sense and we, you know, we can figure it out. I want to say one more thing. Mm-hmm. You know, we were recently in Washington, D.C., and you can immediately tell with that beltway mentality that those people live in a bubble. Okay, the Obamas live in a bubble. These politicians live in bubbles. They have absolutely no idea of what mainstream Americans and people in flyover states like us think about every day.
No, they really don't have any idea. And here's the thing. And, you know, it brings to mind the very first show that I ever did. And I don't know if you remember, but we actually
were. Was that the women's show?
On Life, Liberty,
right,
and the Pursuit of Pleasure. The very first show that I ever did was about, is it time for a woman to be president?
And, oh, I remember that. Yeah, I do.
And my answer to that is, it's not that it's time or not time for a woman to be president. It's time for a qualified person to be president, whether that person is a woman, a man, black, white, Hispanic, whatever they are. It doesn't matter to me as long as they are qualified to be president.
You know, I got to tell you, as a guy, I'm right with you on that. As a matter of fact, if Margaret Thatcher was a United States citizen and she was still alive, I would have voted for her for president.
Here's what women are concerned about. And so here's a news flash for Mrs. Obama. Women are concerned about our families, our economy, our constitution, our health care, our national security, our border security, our free speech. We're concerned about our religious rights. No one should vote, as I said, with using any type of ethnic or gender characteristic. They should vote with their brains. And that's what I frosted my socks about listening to Mrs. Obama on this summit.
So not culture think, but common sense think.
Exactly. Hey. And think about it. Think about what you're voting for and think about what you really want. And don't let other people tell you how to vote. That's my mantra.
And you know, it's interesting. As much as I disagree with Kanye West, that's what he was saying the other day. You know, he was saying, hey, don't tell me how to think. Okay? I know I can think for myself.
Exactly.
And I think we just all have to go in that direction. We have to be able to think for ourselves. We can't have any emotional capture, as I'm fond of saying. We've got to look at things forensically and factually. And you know what?
And that is the politics of intimidation, to try to intimidate women to say that we let the women's race down because we didn't vote for Hillary. And nothing could be further from the truth. Now, would you like another cup of coffee?
I know. And you know what? We're going to stay with the decaf because all this political stuff has already got me jacked up.
Okay, you got it.
Let the silent voices be heard. It's the rallying call that started it all. AmericaOutloud.com. For a wide spectrum of programming from world and political news, societal and cultural stories, law enforcement, our military heroes, and much more. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
This is Dr. Ron Martinelli. forensic criminologist and host of A Thread of Evidence on America Out Loud. If you'd like to find out what forensic criminologists really do in the field, and you're tired of the false narratives about law enforcement and want to unpack the cases that I've worked throughout the nation, then please pick up a copy of my new book, The Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police, on sale right now at Amazon.com. That's The Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police at Amazon.com.
Is that coffee hot enough for you, hon?
It's perfect. Okay, thanks good. So much, hon.
You're welcome. Well, you know what? I had an interesting business day today.
I heard you on the phone, and I didn't think, I wouldn't call it interesting. I'd call it stressful.
It was a stressful business day today.
There you go.
You know, it got me thinking about a study that I saw that I want to talk to you about, and it's really interesting. So they did the best and the worst states for business in the United States. Their survey comes out every year. And this is, I don't even know who puts out this. The Chief Executive magazine, I guess, puts this out. But the number one state for business is Texas.
Well, I think we know that, well, right? Because that's why we moved here. That's why we escaped.
That was. And the second state is Florida. The third is North Carolina, and the fourth is South Carolina, and those are the same four states that have been the top four for the last several years.
Well, let's look at the bottom of that list and see who takes that position.
Well, I will give you just one guess.
It's easy for me. It's California.
It's California is the worst. And right above that, on number 49, would be New York.
And I would think that, like, Connecticut would follow that.
Well, actually, Connecticut's it's down there in the bottom, but Illinois would be the third worst.
Okay.
So I just thought that was really interesting, and why is that? So of course it would be you know the no state taxes, a business friendly atmosphere, and. You
and
know,
regulation, okay,
regulation,
because we all suffer from that.
Taxes, the big
absolutely.
One,
absolutely. Well, and then, you know, I wanted to mention that California, because, you know, but I dump on California. I'm so disappointed in them and their voting bloc over there. But they've got they were voted this year to have the worst quality of life. Okay, so it used to be called the Golden State.
Yeah.
But you know what? That dream has vanished. And there's even a lot of talk about secession, right, which is a fun thing to talk about. But when you get people that live in California talking about seceding from the Union, that just gives you a great bit of evidence to show you how bad the quality of life is there right now. And that's such a shame, because it's a beautiful state, and there is no state that is as demographically and, you know, talking about topography and environment, so diverse than California.
Right, and the weather is generally beautiful there. And that makes a big difference to people. But, you know, their overtaxation has chased so many people out and so many companies out. We've created this huge homeless problem there. So, you know, that also brings to mind for me, what is it about business that makes good business, or what makes not good business? And, you know, I have really kind of... things in my mind that I really think make companies work and businesses work. And number one is a skill that we are losing in this country very rapidly, which is the art of customer service.
No, I absolutely agree with you. You know, You know, the other day, here's a great example. The other day, we're in a restaurant. We're going to try this restaurant out for the first time for breakfast.
Oh, okay? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we got in there, and it's a really pretty place, okay? So it's very nice, a place that you'd want to have breakfast in, okay? And I looked at the menu, and that was my first thing. I'm going, oh, man, this is kind of a weird menu. But anyway, I found something on the menu that I wanted. But but the dish came with sunny side up eggs, and I'm sorry, I'm just one of those guys that just can't do it, okay? I love eggs, but I got to have them scrambled. That's the only way I can take the eggs. And so the server comes over, and you remember, and he says, you know, can I take your order? We both gave him an order. And I said, you know, with mine, can you have the chef just scramble my eggs? And the guy goes, well, we don't do that. I go, excuse me?
Yeah, we don't scramble eggs here.
What do you mean you don't scramble eggs here? He goes, well, our chef just elects not to do that. And I look right down, and right under what I wanted to order for breakfast was none other than quiche. Okay, well, how do you make quiche? Well, you scramble eggs to make quiche. And I said, so wait a minute, let me get this right. I'm not trying to be a wise guy here, but he's elected not to scramble my eggs, but he doesn't have a problem scrambling eggs for quiche, right? And you remember what I said to that guy? I said, you know what? Sometimes it's got to be about the customer.
Right. Well, and here's the point about restaurants is a great example, because in all the places that we travel, restaurant service is so very different. And really, not many places worse than in the United States. So when we travel to Mexico, we have absolutely wonderful customer service. Why? Because it's a career to them.
Absolutely.
Because they respect that career and they respect the people that they're serving and they appreciate their patronage. Where here, it's almost like a...
Well, they're usually actors. Right?
No.
You know, at least in California, they're like actors waiting for another job. It's not their job.
Right. It's generally somebody doing something that's not long term for them.
Right.
And it's about training your employees as well. But, you know, if somebody goes to a restaurant and you get just the best food in that restaurant, but you have terrible service, you probably will not go back. But if you go to a restaurant and the food is okay, but your service is absolutely outstanding, people go back to that restaurant. We all want to have that time that we're spending our money anywhere, whether it's a store or a restaurant, anywhere where we are spending our money. We want to have a good experience and we want to feel like we are valued as a customer.
And you know, us being foodies, and especially me, I tend to get food focused a lot, but when I go into a restaurant, and I don't think I'm any different than anybody else, when I go in a restaurant, obviously I want to have some food, so the menu means something to me, but I want to have an atmosphere. I want to have an experience, okay? I want to have a dining experience.
Right.
And it's got to be about me, okay, and what I want. Well, I can hear those dogs fighting downstairs.
Oh, that's okay. They just want to join in. Yeah, it's... any business, if somebody is going to take their hard-earned money and start a business, then they need to really understand how to make those customers keep coming back to them. And I think that it's a skill that we're losing in this country somewhat. And those companies that do it really well, they it makes all the difference. And here's another example that I'll use for business. When you and I go to a hotel or a resort, and you can go, say, to the Ritz-Carlton, and everybody can't go to the Ritz-Carlton, and I understand that, but guess what? Everybody can give Ritz-Carlton kind of service, because what it's about is it's about looking that customer in the eye, appreciating that they are there, making them feel welcome, and none of that costs anything. As opposed to, here's your room key, you know, find your way to your room, and, you know, so long. It's a mindset about people serving other people, I believe it's the Ritz that has it.
It might
be the Ritz
in Arizona.
Was it the Ritz?
The manager we spoke
that,
with.
That
there.
They have a saying of ladies and gentlemen serving ladies and gentlemen. That mindset costs nothing, but it means everything to the guest. So everywhere you go, and if you're a business owner, we should all have this mindset that we are there to serve people, and there's nothing demeaning about serving other people. We all do it in our lives every day. We all are servers at some point in the day, and we all are served at some point in the day. So we just need to remember that, I think. And I get frustrated when I go into a restaurant like we did, or you have the cashiers talking to each other instead of serving the customers. And waiters and waitresses have a way of not looking at customers. They can walk by you numerous times and not see you raising your hand or trying to call their name or get their attention. It's just an amazing trick that they do.
It's more than a trick. It's a skill. Okay,
I think it's one that they practice.
It's not a good skill, but it's a skill.
It is. And it's so true that's what happens with waiters and waitresses.
So, wait a minute. Along that line, mm-hmm. just the other night, we're in that bar, okay? And you remember there was I didn't see him because we were facing each other. So you saw something I didn't see. But you saw a guy that was a customer sitting at a table away from the bar. And I guess he was waving his arms and stuff. He was trying to get the waiter to pay attention. And the waiter was using the ignore skill.
The ignore skill. And so I got the waiter's attention, and I said, that person over there would like some service. So, yeah. And it's not really so much that we were sitting in a bar. We were waiting for somebody to meet us there so that we could go to the rodeo.
Right.
But anyway, that it is a skill. And I think that this is an issue of training. And I know that that you do some training on this, or you used to. You don't do it so much anymore.
Well, you know, it's called the art of representation. Okay?
Right.
And so I always tell people, no matter what job you have, but when you're an employee, you know, you have to practice. Number one, you got to practice the art of representation in customer service. And what that essentially means is, who are you representing? Number one, you're representing the establishment. Okay? Number two, you're representing the service that you're providing. And number three, you're representing yourself. And they all have to be in harmony, right? The voice, the actions, the customer service, and you got to represent the customer.
Right.
Okay?
You know, if I was a server in a restaurant, and I don't want to pick on restaurants alone because this is in any business, but if I was a server in a restaurant, I absolutely would give the very best service because then I would get more tips. I mean, that just makes sense to me.
But I think they're ambivalent about that. They want tips, but there's also that sense of entitlement. And then they get angry when they don't get a tip. I mean, you know, these days, some restaurants, as you know, are starting to automatically put a tip on the bill. Hey, wait a minute. That's why we call it a tip.
Right.
Okay.
A tip should be for good service and not just for service, because that's what their paycheck is for.
You know, that's exactly right. And you know, in our travels in Mexico and in our travels in Europe, what was interesting to find out, if you remember, is that they actually, most of them actually go to schools and they learn the service business. They learn how to be a waiter. They learn how to be a waitress. And like you said earlier, it's a profession. With us here in the United States, it's like, oh, I'm going to do this until I get to do something else. With them, it's, I'm going to be working in this restaurant for 20 years, okay? And I want to do the very best job, the very best art of representation I can. And it really comes through for people like us. We get so spoiled when we go to Mexico and Europe, and then we come back here, and it's so depressing with regards to customer service.
Yeah, and like I say, it's in everywhere that you go. It could be in a place where you fix your car. It could be in a grocery store. It could be in a department store.
It could be in the Department of Motor Vehicles.
Could be especially in any government office. And let's talk about that for a second.
Well, let's talk about the TSA, right?
We want to
talk about bad customer service.
That is bad customer service. But any government office really has some of the worst service. And so do people like Verizon, or even though they tout their good customer service, you spend hours on the phone trying to get customer service. DMV is one of my favorites because I've been trying to get them on the phone actually for days now to fix an error that they made on one of our vehicles. This is California DMV, and we don't live in California. So, they go out of their way to not give customer service and to try to get people off the phone or not calling. And the companies that are trying to make people go on the internet and do everything rather than, you know, have a human being to talk to really make me mad and frustrate me.
Well, you know, you already mentioned, you know, a company that's probably got the worst customer service model that I've ever seen, and that is Verizon. Okay, and I was a longtime Verizon customer ever since the beginning of cell phones. I was a Verizon customer, and I stopped using them about 3 years ago because their business model was horrible. And it wasn't just with the cell phones. It was with everything they did. And their fiber optic people didn't even talk to their, you know, copper cable people, and they wouldn't even pick up the phone and do anything. Every single thing had to be by an email, and you just can never catch up to emails. Look at your emails. Sometimes you get 600 emails a day.
Right.
How can you ever do that? You know, and it's not just that. Look at Yelp. I mean, the other day I went round and round with Yelp because of one of our companies, and Yelp was basically messing with us, and they wouldn't put the good comments from customers on our business. And I called them up. Actually, they called me up to ask me how they could improve my business. And I said, well, you're not putting down what the customers are saying. You know, you're giving me a 5-star rating for my company, but you're not telling people what the customers have to say. And they said, well, we don't have any choice on that. And I go, how could you not? He goes, well, the whole thing is done by artificial intelligence with an algorithm. And I said, well, then how do you have some good, testimonials, but you won't put others in? And he goes, well, I can't help you with that. It's all about the machine, but we're doing a great job.
Yeah.
Well, wait a minute. You might think that you're doing a great job, but
not
for me.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's my customer service little kind of beef today. And, you know, I think we can do better in this country, and I hope that we make an effort to do so.
Well, I think we just got to put our big boy pants on and stop this whole entitlement stuff, stop this bureaucratic mindset, have a good art of representation, and be proud about the work that we do in all of our jobs. Whatever your work is, do the best you possibly can every single day.
Yep. Ready for a refill?
You know I am.
Okay.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount, or call 844-869-9958.
So I am enjoying this great plate of home-cooked chocolate chip cookies.
All right. My favorite.
So anyway, thanks.
Actually, our son asked me to make them tonight, so...
Well, I smelled them.
Yeah.
I just didn't want you to burn them.
No.
So anyway, I want to talk about Baltimore, the city of Baltimore, and just this issue that they had the other day. Baltimore, I think, and I just wrote an article about it not too long ago, about the 15 most violent cities in the United States, and Baltimore is way up there. I think St. Louis, Missouri is number one, and I think Baltimore is number two. But anyway, so after all the Freddie Gray stuff, I wrote about that in my Black Lives Matter book and everything, okay? Anyway, because of all the rigmarole and all of that stuff, they decided to put together a civilian oversight task force. Well, the other day, the chair of this civilian oversight, this is oversight over the police department, mind you, the guy's name is Marvin McKinstry, and he's a pastor, okay? And he finds himself double parked in a business district, and he's dropping somebody off, and that person I think is getting dropped off or whatever. He's picking somebody up. Anyway, he's blocking a whole lane of traffic in a business district in downtown Baltimore, so you can imagine what that looks like.
Well, I do, but it's interesting that you say he finds himself there. Probably he put himself there. Would that be?
Well, I guess so. Yeah, okay. It wasn't like he discovered himself there. Okay, so anyway, let me get to the point here.
Get to the point.
So anyway, what he does is a police car comes up behind him because he's got traffic all backed up, right? He's got his little flashers on, and the police officer gets on the PA, says, "Sir, you got to move your car." And the guy just sticks his left arm out the window like, "Hey, go ahead and pass me." And the cop, "Hey, it doesn't work that way. You've got traffic backed up. We're downtown here. Let's go, buddy." And the guy's not moving. So the police officer gets out of the car, and I think it's a sergeant. And he goes up to him and he says, "Sir, what are you doing?" And he says, "Well, I'm dropping somebody off, or I'm waiting for somebody." And the police officer says, "You can't do that. You got to drive around the block and do it like that." And so the guy says, "Well, I'm not moving." And the police officer says, "Oh, excuse me?" He goes, "No, I'm not moving." And
you said, "What?"
So then it's, "Hey, I've been there, right?" I'm like, "License and registration, right?" And the guy goes, "I'm not giving you my license." And the cop goes, "Excuse me? Hey, I really need your license and registration." Well, thank God for body cams, right? Let me just cut to the chase here, okay? 60 times the police sergeant, and another sergeant comes over, and they're trying to de-escalate and talk with this guy and be all respectful. So after asking this guy 60 times for the driver's license and registration and not getting any compliance, not getting the guy a move, they finally take this guy and they place him under arrest. They don't physically place him under arrest, because the guy's identified himself as a civilian task force, chairperson. How embarrassing. But they write him like several tickets. So they wrote this guy up about $1,000 worth of tickets. And I guess he's going to have to, answer that. But the thing that I find is so amazing about this is, why isn't the public media, and I know that the story was in the Baltimore Sun, okay, why isn't the media asking some questions? Number one, what's this guy doing on a civilian oversight task force when he knows nothing about the rule of law? He has complete disrespect for the police and thinks he can do whatever he wants. Okay, and this is the guy that is the chair. He's just not a regular member. He's the chair of the oversight committee, number one. Number two, he's a pastor. And number three, he's got both implicit and confirmation bias against these officers and doesn't know anything about the law or what his civil rights are and what they're not. And it just angers me because there's so much of this type of resistance in the community.
How scary is that to be a police officer and have that type of a person overseeing what you do when they will not follow the laws themselves?
Well, there's no vet. I mean, my question is, I want to know what the vetting process is. How do you pick these guys? And then what are you doing to train them about what police do for a living and what citizens can do and what they can't do? You can't just slap an officer, so to speak, in the face and look at the disrespect to all the other people that he had backed up down the street. And he's going to oversee what the police do, and he's going to criticize what the police do with the bias he has?
No, that's absolutely scary.
So,
that person should no longer be allowed to have that position whatsoever. And you know, I suppose that they'll have to wait till they adjudicate his case or do whatever they do with his tickets.
Well, don't think as a criminologist I'm not going to follow up on this
well,
and,
I hope
and
so,
find out what's
like
going on.
I'd like to hear
on.
How it goes.
Sure. Now, I know you want to talk about something interesting.
Well, you know, I have another little kind of frost my socks thing, but this is really interesting. This is in San Diego, in California, and there's a school. It's a charter school, so it's not a public school, and I really had a hard time getting the information on this school, but it's in the Sweetwater Union High School District, so I'm going to assume that it's at the high school. But they have had an artist that painted a mural on a wall there, and this artist's name was Sasha Andrade. And the mural depicts, and I brought you a picture of it so you can take a look at it. It depicts...
Is that what I think I see?
It depicts three warriors. One is gripping a sword, another is grasping a heart, and the third is clutching the spear with the president's severed head, with the spear going right through the back of his head and through his mouth.
This is disgraceful.
What are we saying to our students in high school by depicting this as a mural at a school, a charter school, by the way, which I have generally had more respect for, and now I'm like second-guessing my respect for the charter schools.
Well, I'm kind of wondering, are they getting public money there? You know, I know you said private school,
well,
but it is a charter school. Are they getting public money?
Well,
there's
a nonprofit that oversees the school, and it's independently run. It's not governed by the district's board of trustees.
But you know what? As an old teacher, it's still got to be accredited by the California Department of Education and the Superintendent of Schools. It still has to be accredited. It can't operate as a school without accreditation.
Well, my question here would be, did nobody see while this artist was painting this what was going on? Did nobody have some sort of an idea of what they were going to paint before they painted it on a school ground to, you know, give some sort of opinion that this could be a wrong thing to do for our students?
Well, I don't think some of the teachers are, you know, I think they're ambivalent about this kind of stuff. And maybe they're looking at it as a, you know, so-called, you know, First Amendment right. Well, let me tell you what, if you're getting public monies, you know, you can't do stuff like that.
You know what? I don't care if you're getting public money or private money. You can't do this to my child in your school. This is a total disrespect for the presidency of the United States and the just America in general. And I disagree with it. And they have now covered it up because that there was so many complaints about it. So that's the good news part of that story. The fact that it got there is worrisome, though.
Well, I'll tell you what, that's pretty shocking. The photograph speaks for itself.
I have another little interesting story that, you know, another story that we did on Life Liberty, which is interesting that somehow these things all kind of go in circles, right? Is that, and we've talked a few times about drones, and we have a drone. So, and you love your drone.
I love my drone. We use it for crime scenes.
And we use it to look at, you know, the house from above and so forth. But we don't use it for anything that we shouldn't be using it for.
Right.
Well, the FBI was out on an operation, and they had a FBI hostage rescue team, and they set up a observation post to monitor a situation that they had going on. All of a sudden, a swarm of small drones came and over the FBI and was, you know, I guess they have cameras on them, right? So they're showing the bad guys where the FBI people are here and keeping in real time with what they're doing so that the bad guys could get away. And this is kind of scary.
Well, you know what? I was just reading Police Magazine the other day, and they actually have a portable weapon system that they are giving to police that shoots down drones.
Okay? Oh, okay.
You can point at the drone and you can, you know, it's not like a bullet thing.
Does it deactivate the drone?
No, what it does is it's a projectile, and when it gets near the drone, it opens up and there's like a netting, and it like captures the drone and knocks it down.
Oh, I had not heard of that.
That was pretty cool.
Well, you know, another way that they've used them in Australia is they've had these drones fly into the ports, you know, where they have shipments come in and out.
Oh, like Amazon.
Yeah, and they fly into the ports and they use them in smuggling schemes. So say that they have one of those rail cars that comes in and that's been shipped on the ocean, right? And it's got things in it that it shouldn't have in it. And they have the drone up there. And if the authorities get too close to that, they do something to cause a distraction so that they go away from that particular crate.
No, that container.
Yeah. Yeah, so that they don't catch them with what they're doing. So, you know, it always when we come out with something good, right, somebody finds a way to do something illegal with it. And, you know, this is going to be just a whole new battlefront for us in law enforcement to be, you know, really looking at what these drones can do. And you can use them both ways for good.
Yeah, no, you really can.
Also for bad.
You know, it's a brave new world out there. And I'll tell you, you know, the drone that we use is just fantastic. And we can do things now with crime scenes where before, you know, you needed like a hook and ladder truck or you needed a cherry picker or something like that. And that's all pretty hard to do. Now we just, you know, unpack it literally from a small box and send it aloft and get our videos and get our crime scene photos and everything. And it's just fantastic.
Yeah, well, these guys who disrupted the FBI operation, they all had the drones in their backpacks. And then when they got near enough, they just took them out and released them. So, I mean, you don't even know that they're coming with these, you know?
Yeah, I mean, they really don't make very much noise at all. You got to sort of know what it sounds like. It's almost like a bumblebee when they're up in the air.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, I thought that was an interesting story.
Hey, well, how about something funny?
Okay. I'm up for it.
Okay, so we get this lady. She's 57 years old, and her name is Jennifer Sue Roberts, and she's out of Tampa, Florida. And so she keeps calling emergency 911 line and saying she's in what is your medical emergency, right?
Right.
And she says, I need a beer. And they're going... You know, like police always say, excuse me.
Yeah, that could be an emergency.
And they said, what is your emergency? She says, well, I need a beer. And they said, please, you know, stop calling. You know, don't do this. It's a crime. Don't call. So long, about a half an hour later, emergency 911. What's your emergency? She goes, I got a medical emergency. What is it? She goes, I need a beer. They said, we'll be right there. Right. So they show up and they bring paramedics just in case. Right. But they bring the popo. Right.
Okay.
And lo and behold, they find her in a state of what?
Intoxication.
You got it. So anyway, they took her.
Was she out of beer?
Well, I just wanted to know what beer she ordered. So what do you got?
Well, I don't know if this has to do with beer or not, but it does have to do with dinner. I saw that The Hill, which you write for from time to time.
You're darn right I do.
Right? They pulled out of the White House Correspondents' Dinner for next year because of Michelle Wolf's out-of-line routine.
Well, good for them.
Yeah. I think that was the first people that I saw really make a statement that they were not going to participate in this. And they said that it's because that this event is supposed to be, you know,
it's a charitable event.
It's a charitable event. It's supposed to be a nonpartisan event without hostility and animus towards people. It's supposed to be funny, regardless of who's in power. And they said that the past dinners were tremendous spectacles of dignity, and that Wolf was out of line, and that they will not participate anymore.
Well, you know what? I've watched the ones in the past, but because last year's was so bad, you know, and then Trump said, "Hey, that's it for me. I'm not doing this." Now it is a spectacle, okay? Because here's what I saw. Now I didn't watch it. I actually was watching something else, mm-hmm. Because now it's been in the news and everything, they did have some replays. They had it on One American News, they had it on Fox, and they're doing some replays of what this is like. these correspondents seem to think that they're at the Emmys or the Oscars, yeah. right? So now they got the red carpet. Are you kidding me? You're a bunch of reporters, and it's all about the dresses, and then it's all about, I think this is the left coast's version of what we see out in Hollyweird, where you've got to say something that is just so shocking, you know, to get people to resonate with what you're saying. But when I was watching that woman, the so-called comedian, just absolutely insult, Sarah Huckabee Sanders, who's a really class act in my book, there weren't people laughing. There was just a couple.
Right. Well, you know, the good news about this is that The Hill will continue to support and donate to the WHCA Scholarship Foundation, because that's what this event is about. So they're going to keep their donations to the program. They just are no longer going to attend.
Well, good for them. What else you got?
Yeah. Well, you know, just a quickie on
an
update.
Just a quickie? I'll take a quickie.
update on the two men that were arrested in the Starbucks for not leaving. And, you know, they were going to sue. But what they did instead of doing that is that they, in exchange for expunging the city and the company of all claims, their names are Dante Robinson and Rashawn Nelson, they're settling for $1 each and a pledge from the city to create a $200,000 grant program for high school entrepreneurs. So something good came of that. And, you know, kudos to them for not taking the route of greed and being self-absorbed, but doing something for somebody else in your community to make their life better.
And I know you're a huge supporter of young entrepreneurs, and you do a lot of mentoring. So I agree with you. That was nice of them to do that.
It was very, very nice. And, you know, I have a hero of the day who's an Air Force rookie. And this young man, he also rescued somebody, but it was on social media. How often does this happen?
Not often.
So senior airman Charles Woomer from the Fairchild Office of Special Investigations in Washington was browsing the Air Force page on Reddit, and he noticed something was concerning. So amidst everything he was looking at, he noticed that another user, who was a military person, was asked if his life insurance policy would pay off for his family if something were to happen to him before he separated from the military.
Oh, that doesn't sound good.
No, it doesn't sound good. But here's somebody who, instead of just reading it, took one step further. And that one step, well, actually, probably took a couple steps. He contacted employees at Google and Reddit to get the man's identity. He explained the situation to his supervisor, made over 25 calls to get in touch with his commander, and they approached the airman, and that airman was indeed planning on committing suicide.
Which is a huge problem in the military. One of the most gravest problems in the military throughout the branches of service, by the way.
That airman had medication for his depression, but had run out, man. Which happens all too often. And had he succeeded, he would have left behind a wife and two children, ages 4 and 9. So this, by his actions and his caring about somebody, he got this other airman the help that he needed, and all turned out well.
Well, that's
my hero for the night.
And you know what? That's a great way to end the evening. Boy, wasn't this a fantastic day.
It was a fantastic day, fantastic rodeo. A good talk with my hubby, and I am ready for bed.
And me too. I love you, sweetheart.
Love you.